Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily political podcast. I'm Lara Prendergast and I'm today joined by James Forsyth and Katie Balls. So James, she survived. What's the aftermath been this morning?
It's almost the ultimate indeterminate result. She's done sufficiently badly that she can't shake it off, but it's not so bad that it's going to finish off her premiership. So the Tory party is stuck in, our dear friend Geoffrey Cox would say, is stuck in limbo. You know, it is in Dante's first circle of hell, just going round and round again. And this is the problem, which is, you know, over a third of her parliamentary party don't have confidence in her, which in a hung parliament means that she's got no chance of getting big legislation through. Obviously, has implications for Brexit. Yet at the same time, they don't have enough votes to get rid of her. So we are stuck. I mean, the big takeaway from yesterday is that she's fired the starting gun on the next Tory leadership contest because she has said that she won't fight the next election. So therefore, you know, you are going to see more and more cabinet ministers and other people who think they should be the next leader kind of coming out to set out their stall. But obviously the biggest question for the country isn't who the next prime minister is going to be, but what happens with Brexit. And I don't think that was made any clearer by what happened yesterday.
Yeah, we know that Theresa May is still going to have a lot of difficulty trying to get this through. And I think when it comes to that, we also saw that in order to even get the votes that she did, so it was 200 votes for her, 117 against, but she had to make some pretty big pledges to get there. One of which was the fact she's not planning to lead them into the next election. Should that election be a little while away? I think she left her a tiny amount of wriggle room there. But the two relating to Brexit were the idea that she was going to try and come up with a legally binding solution to the Irish backstop problem, something Brussels do not want to do, really, and all the indications to say they don't want to renegotiate that. And the second thing was to tell her MPs that she was now working with the DUP in a progressive manner. The DUP would tell you a different side of that story. They would suggest that they are not working in that manner. They don't feel like they're being listened to. So I think even in the short term, it's really hard to see how the assurances she gave to her party yesterday to keep herself in position are going to hold true. And on Brexit, there is now a fear amongst Eurosceptics that their gamble has backfired to the extent that if Theresa May really gets stuck, she could try and get it through by pivoting to a much softer Brexit, because technically the Brexiteers can't challenge her for a year. So to do that, they would, you know, perhaps go full permanent customs union, also like try and get the Labour votes. I mean, it is easier said than done, because if she were to do that, it would stretch the divisions in the Conservative Party to a new level. But I think there will be some people in her party saying to her, you now have the room to do this.
I think the problem with her in terms of this kind of pivoting to Parliament is that she doesn't want to do it, right? Because any pivot to Parliament essentially involves having to go, you know, to the full Norway plus, right? So basically, in this permanent customs union, as Katie said, but also in the single market. Theresa May can't and won't do that because that involves accepting free movement. She has defined honouring the referendum result as being about free movement. So I don't see how she can do that. I also think that it's hard to see where the votes are for Norway Plus, because I think a lot of the Labour people who were in favour of it 6 months ago are now backing a second referendum, because they can see that kind of the prize of remaining is now within their grasp. And I think a similar thing, and I think there are two problems on the Tory side, is one, I think cabinet ministers who were quite open to the idea when they thought it was kind of Norway for now and it could be sold as, you know, the first step on a journey, now look at it and see that it involves accepting the backstop. It involves basically saying that we're planning to do this for the foreseeable future. And so they find it far less appealing from a Tory point of view. And at the same time, some of the Tory remainers in the cabinet would now rather go for a second referendum than Norway Plus. So I think the kind of situation we're heading towards is a moment when there's no majority in Parliament for anything. And at that point, does Parliament end up saying, we're going to chuck it back to the voters because we can't work out what to do?
Katie, do you think there's a chance that Theresa May sees this as a small victory, the fact that she's survived?
I think small is probably the operative word. I think that those around May were surprised and disappointed. I sound a bit like someone's parent here. Surprised and disappointed by the margins. And they had thought she would win by a larger number. I think that it's safe to say it hasn't emboldened her. And what will be of slight irritation to Theresa May's allies is what lots of people wanted to do was show that the people who were tabling this no confidence vote, the people who sent the letters in, those 48 letters, they were a small minority who were completely unreasonable. If I was going to use Philip Hammond's words, which of course, you know, is a pure quote, he called them, you know, Brexit extremists, this idea that, and I think they wanted to do that, but given that the number of people who voted against her is 117, it's very hard to make that case now. And I think that's a problem for her. So yes, it is a win in the sense that she is still in number 10. But I do think, I know we constantly say her position gets weaker. I do think her position is weaker than it was earlier in the week, even though she can't be challenged, just because she's had to admit publicly the fact she is not going to lead them into another election. And she managed to get that vote, which wasn't particularly impressive numbers. Like, it was enough that I think you can make the argument, as Jacob Rees-Mogg has done, that she should now step aside because it's a triple figure defeat. But I think the number is respectable enough that we're not seeing all the wagons circling right now. But ultimately, the number is just uncomfortable for her. And that was after she had to make caveats and promises that she'll find difficult to keep.
I also mean this promise not to lead the Tories into the next election. This is a piece of string that's going to be pulled on and pulled on and pulled on over time. You know, you've already got people who voted for her last night saying, you know, look, right now, it's got to be a departure, you know, days, weeks after Brexit Day. And I mean, this is one of the things that will happen. She's basically conceded that by offering to go, she can win, she can get some votes. So if they get, I mean, obviously, if they begin to have some success in whittling down this rebellion on her Brexit deal, you know, you are going to have cabinet ministers saying, well, Prime Minister, you know, you might need to bring that date forward. You might need to provide some more clarity. That might be the difference between getting this deal over the line or not, is whether you promise to basically go as soon as it's through. And it is, I mean, sometimes as a political journalist, you have kind of moments that are totally surreal. And yesterday I was doing my usual corridor lurking off 922 committee, and a Tory MP came up and grabbed my hand and said, it's all right, I can vote for her because she said she's going. We've kind of genuine enthusiasm. And it is a weird moment that by promising to depart, essentially, you can persuade people to vote, but they have confidence in you. What it really shows is that they don't have confidence in you, because if you have confidence in someone, you wouldn't require that. You know, if you ask me, Lara, do I have confidence in you? It's not premised on you departing from your job at any point.
I think we need a secret ballot if we're going to do that. Confidence in Lara.
And so I think this is the problem for her. As Katie said, she still has over a third of her parliamentary party voting for her, despite having said all of these things. And it does suggest that the number who have genuine, true confidence in her is far, far lower than the 200 MPs who voted for her.
And Katie, what does this mean for her leadership rivals, people like Dominic Raab and Sajid Javid?
So yesterday, it was rather quiet when it came to, obviously, this vote was going ahead, but we didn't really hear much from the people who had touted as potential leadership rivals. So Boris Johnson didn't raise his head to do a rallying cry to vote against her. David Davis probably came the closest to suggesting that he wasn't going to vote for her. But in general, it did feel that everyone was keeping their powder dry. I think partly because the vote was closer than it was expected yesterday morning. Now we have seen Dominic Raab today, who is former Brexit secretary, suggest a question whether Theresa May can stay in post. Now, that is being read as the first leadership candidate really kind of making their manoeuvre, and it might now inspire people like Boris Johnson to break cover. Technically, though, Theresa May is safe. So the only way that she leaves her job right now is if she chooses to. So there could be, if all these rivals start to come out and say she should go, that would put pressure on her. But I think what would need to change would be the cabinet. So if you had the cabinet tell her to go, or cabinet leadership candidates start being really indiscreet, though you could read the Christmas issue of The Spectator for Sajid Javid's interview. If you had that, it would put more pressure on her. I think while it is mainly the Brexiteer candidates, so the ones that we know aren't in government right now, suggesting she should go, it doesn't change the numbers that much.
I think one of the things yesterday is after the ballot closed and while they were being counted, I saw one of the more senior members of the ERG, and I said to him, you know, how many have you got? And he kind of looked very nervous. He said, maybe 120. And they weren't far off that. But I mean, the problem was everyone has been so burned by the earlier, we're going to get to 48 letters and then failing to do so, that no one wanted to trust the numbers. And that, as Katie said, that meant some of the big beats yesterday were a bit worried because, you know, during the day yesterday, it didn't feel like there was a huge amount of momentum with this push. And so I think what was worrying some of those potential leadership camps was you don't want to come out and say, this is the great moment, go for it. And then it gets a kind of underwhelming 70, 85 votes. And everyone goes, oh, look, that's not much cop. I think that was part of the problem. I think also the other problem is this, is the, you know, the Tory party is convinced of this mantra that he who wields a knife never wears the crown. Now, it is a slightly odd mantra, given that Margaret Thatcher wielded the knife and ended up wearing the crown for, 15 years. So it is a, I mean, but no one wants to do it. And that, I think, is one of the things that is going on.
Thanks, James, and thank you, Katie.